Please be advised that this episode deals with content relating to sexual assault and may be offensive and harmful to some audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Amagwini thokozani emakhosini. Igama lam nguzipho wakwaKudolamo elokugula nguMayihlome. Xa uthanda ungandibiza ngoguMayihlome okanye ngogonyazi lwezulu. Bendizothanda uthatha eli thuba ndicamagushe kuzo zonke izihlweli ezindiphetheyo eziphakathi komzimba wam endilibeleyo okanye endingazibizanga ngoku zingaqumbi iziqalekisi. Ndiqale ngocamagusha emabheleni, emkolanga odlambulo oqunta ovaphi onondanda kuphakanyiswa ndiyacamagusha. Ndicamagushe emazizini olamyeni omtatela ongxibi noboya. Ndicamagushe kombathano oxesibe ndingawalibelanga amampinga owawa obholokoqoshe. Ndicamagushe kwisihlwele sandiphehlelelayo sandibeka ibhekile entloko nditsho kuthiyani uzengele unonkosi xa ndisitsho ndicamagushe. Ndicamagushe ke kwisihlwele sotholo ndlangisa ndicamagushe kootita ongcwangule. Ndicamagushe kwisihlwele sandifundisa uphakama isidlozi njalo ndithokozise kubaba wam uMamntambo kaNhlangothe ngithi thokoza gogo. Ndithokozise kugogomkhulu wami uMapitsi kaMahoto ndithi bayethe makhosi amakhulu makhosi ezizwe. Ndiyacamagusha.
Thokozani and welcome to episode 17 of Gogo Have I Been Scammed, brought to you by Times Live. On this platform, we discuss, share wisdom, and raise awareness on all things traditional African spirituality, including indigenous knowledge, but not limited to scams. My name is Gogo Zipho Dolamo, and I am your host. I want to start off today by emphasizing that on this platform, we're open to discussing a range of topics from faith, African spirituality, and Christian methodologies, particularly how we use these tools to navigate and deal with real life situations. Situations and interactions, interpersonal relationships that leave us heartbroken, physically harmed, and without any hope. In those moments of vulnerability and turmoil, we turn to faith, we turn to spirituality, we turn to God, we turn to our guardians to find a way to make it through. Some do in isolation or in combination. Prayer, journaling, ukuphahla, meditating, and speaking to the universe. Today, we will be speaking to someone who leaned on her faith in times of weakness, helplessness, and hurt. She turned to faith for healing and shared her vulnerability by authoring two books in hopes of resonating with women and people of faith who are to be let known that they are not alone in their journeys. A big part of spirituality is healing. And I know we use the word healing and trauma quite haphazardly in popular culture, but these are genuine constructs that work with or against one another within one psyche, shaping how you become, who you act, how you think about yourself, and how you relate to others. Now, I'm sure many of you might be wondering what this has to do with African spirituality, and to that I issue the reminder that Christianity and spirituality are not mutually exclusive. African spiritualists sometimes do self-identify as Christians, and moreover, this is about providing our listeners with coping strategies and finding healthy ways to cope with whatever one is going through in healthy and non-destructive ways to yourself and spirit. So today we will be genuinely talking about healing and genuinely healing that trauma, leaning on faith, leaning on spirituality, and exploring a different number of methodologies. Now, for those who have not followed my column on Sowetan, on the Sowetan Live website, you will have noticed that I share an open admiration for women who live in faith, women who empower other women, be it through physical acts or sharing stories, women who are kind-hearted, and women who I describe as having a personal relationship with God. Naturally, this is through my observation of them. Women who do not just attend church and put on their pretty faces, but really practically rely on faith and their spirituality. Which brings us to our guest today. Author and reproductive rights activist, Mrs. Buntle Moka. Buntle has authored two books titled Church and Memoirs of His Bathroom Floor. Now, Memoirs of His Bathroom Floor is an anthology of painful and traumatic events expressed through poetry. Mrs. Moka, as I know her, is a devout wife and Christian. Buntle, welcome, and thank you for deciding to join us today on the podcast.
Thank you, Gogo Zipo. Thanks for creating the space and just giving me the opportunity to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, tell us about your faith, your beliefs, your spirituality, just about Buntle. Who are you and who are you in those aspects?
Okay, well, I am still getting to know her, I must admit. But I think just to sum it up, you know, as you mentioned, I'm a writer. I advocate for endometriosis and other reproductive health conditions and just fight for ending period poverty. I am really passionate about sexual trauma and mental health, as those are my lived experiences. You know, I write about them, I speak about them. And I was born and raised Adventist. I still identify as Adventist, but I've, you know, obviously had my journey discovering a lot, you know, so I'm very connected to God. I'm a Jesus girly. And yeah, that's really just me summed up.
I like that. I like that you call yourself a Jesus girly. I love that, actually. tell us a little bit about marriage, right, and being a wife. Naturally, as you just expressed, you are an Adventist, and naturally we're Black, and there are some cultural necessities that need to be observed. Mm. Can you tell us a little bit about your marriage journey and, you know, balancing being a Christian while also balancing the potential for the expression of tradition and culture?
Yeah, of course. So I think just to give some context, I married an American. So as much as there is my background, there's also his, and maybe a lot of maybe educating that I may have had to do, and a lot of maybe learning and adjusting that I may have had to do as well. So I've been, I guess, fortunate enough, and this might be a little controversial, but to have parents that have also shifted or moved from some of the cultural things that is because of Christianity and just certain things that maybe they may not subscribe to. And at the time, we just genuinely, in the practicality of things, we couldn't do everything because he had come to South Africa and was gonna leave in a week or so, you know. So there's just so many things that we kind of had to skip over. So for me, in terms of, say, Lobola, we kind of went the route of just going to sign at Home Affairs. And, you know, one of the things my parents said to me, especially because that was a very difficult thing for me to let go, thinking that, okay, no, there's certain things that we need to do. And a part of me was like, but there's also things that if we're truly following cultural things, then why not take up all of them? But then there's the Christian aspect where I'm like, but I don't know. I don't really know about this other stuff, you know. So for us, we just decided to quote unquote just be modern and quick. And one of the things, like I was saying, my father said to me was, you know, whatever the symbolism of, say, lobola and all of these things, you're going to see it tenfold and even more in your marriage. And as soon as we got married, I was still very attached to, like, no, we didn't do it like this. I didn't wear this. The aunties didn't do this. I was very, very attached to that. I felt like I had missed some part of me or something. But as soon as we got married, I promise you, I really did see everything tenfold, whether it's seeing my husband or my in-laws giving that, like, symbolism of what I thought lobola is supposed to be. I saw that in a different aspect. So in terms of, I've really seen family coming together more than I would have expected. It's like we've been together from day one. It's like my parents and his parents, like, go way back when they don't really, you know. So all of that coming togetherness, as much as we didn't stick to what I had thought we had to for the cultural part of it, I've seen it, I think, take place and manifest in such a beautiful way in our lives, in our marriage. And I have no regrets, but as much as I was still attached to it, I'm getting to know that in terms of what I think God wants of us is happening. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, definitely. I think I will confess that you are the first person that I've had a conversation with ever who, you know, has done marriage like this and has not had to deal with backlash from family, right?
Yeah.
Because to me, it sounds as though both families were supportive, even though knowing that there are some things that they are going to be bypassed. But it wasn't a matter of Wuti. They are using that to sort of hold or halt the progression of your relationship, if that makes any sense.
Or, but I must admit, sorry to cut you, that I know that there are people in, I guess, my family that may not be particularly comfortable or happy with that. But I think we both decided that if our parents, our immediate family, and I know that when we're African, it's so much bigger than that. There's the uncles and the aunts and stuff like that. But in our situation, we really kind of had to think about, you know, what can we do right now? And it just, we wouldn't have gotten married if we didn't just take that leap of faith. So it upset a few people, but in terms of our immediate family, we got their blessing and their support. So the rest of the people kind of just had to, you know, deal with that.
Of course. I guess, I mean, look, I would make the analogy that, you know, a decision was made and all of your parents were like your bulletproof vest almost towards everything else and towards everyone else. And I think that's a very precious and a very special thing to have. The parents themselves are also not lobbying to be like, yeah, we want this. They're not just genuinely within thinking about the best interests of their daughter and your happiness as well. So you're very fortunate. You're very, very fortunate.
I'm very grateful.
And if your parents do listen to this, big shout out to them for being that bulletproof and being that wall and being those protectors, right? Okay, so your first book, Church, right? You described it quite beautifully for me yesterday. And you said it is sort of used as an analogy to symbolize deeply devoted love portrayed as worship, right? Can you talk to us about that? Talk to us about church itself, because from my understanding, it is nearly a journey of love, I want to say. But I found the quote that you gave me quite striking and quite powerful. So can you talk to us about that a little bit?
Yeah, so I pretty much, if I can say, I start the book by saying I made you my church. And initially that was going to be the title. But, you know, I went with church because I believe that I made someone my church. I was actually in a very difficult place when I wrote that book, or coming out of a very difficult place. I was so heartbroken. I was dating someone. We got engaged, broke up. And yeah, by the time that I wrote that, I was coming out of the pain. But I felt that, you know, as much as I didn't want to make it about him, it was very much about me and how I had lost a sense of me. But I felt that, you know, he was meant to be church. And I ended up making him almost more than that. I think putting him on a pedestal, idolizing his place in my life and not God's. Mm-hmm. And so in all of that, like, I think that's why I just felt like I was so devastated. I'm like, why is this person so important? Like, because there were times I went to workshops, I watched, you know, sermons, spoke to people and all of that. But I could deal with other things going on in my life, but I just could not get over this, you know. And somewhere in there, I pretty much say, like, how is it that what I feel for this person, I don't think I have the same energy for God. So I need to, like, change something. I need to, like, redirect this energy, like, you know, for someone who actually sent their son to die for me, you know. And so I pretty much speak on how I deal with that pain, and then eventually, hopefully, you know, give hope to someone in the end. You know, I don't want to give too many spoilers, but yeah, I made him my church. But the funny story is, because I do believe in healing and restoration, and not to give everyone, like, the green light to go back to their ex, but he's my now husband, you know. And I did, like, a lot of healing from that point. And it was almost like, it's not even about you. It was about me very much, and finding my source again, and God. And yeah, it wasn't just like, oh, I just needed to pray it away. No, I write that I, you know, went binge drinking. I just did a lot of reckless things, and just very destructive behavior in that time, in that season. Until then, I started maybe discovering, like, okay, what are better ways for me to heal, you know? So yeah, that's pretty much church. He was my church, but I found a different church, my actual church, which was God. And now we have a healthy relationship with my husband. And yeah, you know.
And when you say he was my church, right? I find that quite profound. But I also would like to hear what you mean by that from your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So in my mind, when I think of church, I think of a place or a community where you're meant to be safe. You're meant to share all your troubles. You're meant to, or at least should be allowed the space to be completely yourself, not judged, loved. A space where you, you know, can, yeah, just be self, and then you are encouraged to be a better version of yourself. You do good for the community. You know, that's what I think of when I think of church and the church body, if I can put it that way, not necessarily just the structure. So for me, he was that. I felt that I was completely myself. I could go to him, not judged. And even if I'm wrong, he could be like, hey, look, come back on track. Even if I didn't like it. And so in my mind, that's what church is meant to be. And so I completely found that, at least I would think, in him. But then I think I took it a step further where I was like, okay, you're my church, but maybe to some extent I'm making you more important than the true one. You know what I mean? Without knowing it at the time, I never said that, like, no, I don't care about, you know, the God that I believe in. But when I look back, you know, they say hindsight is 20/20. You look back and you're like, oh, that was not okay for me to do. Because I think had I not put him on that pedestal, I think I would have healed sooner. And not to put a time on how quickly you're meant to heal or anything like that. It took me 5 years to really like start saying, okay, I'm doing better now. Not even to say I'm 100%. 5 years and I was completely heartbroken, devastated. And maybe towards the end of the 5th year, I was like, okay, I think I'm okay now. Whereas I think had I realized maybe some things about myself, about just the relationship, and it wasn't bad. It was the most beautiful relationship I've been in. I think just parts of myself that maybe I began to lose, I think I would have healed a little bit sooner and just been able to get up, you know.
And finding also healthier ways to deal with it. Because I think, you know, in our youth and in our, like, in our youth, once there's just something that is deeply weighing on you, or just deeply work on it incessantly, but nothing comes right, like, it's easy to turn to anything as an outlet.
Right.
And I heard you speak about, like, you know, the binge drinking, you know, the binge drinking, partying, just being out there is an outlet, because you really, you would really rather sort of be surrounded by or have sort of your reality shifted a bit than to deal with the real crux of the issue, right?
Yeah.
And I also think that sometimes, you know, we find partners and we find these people for whom, if I can use your expression, for whom we make our church, right? But sometimes, as you said, it goes a step further and it becomes about the worshipping of this person and the worshipping of this relationship. And I'm not sure how healthy that is. And I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know either. Like, I think there must be like a level of a healthy relationship. And not to say, and let me put it like this. One of the things I think I dealt with was the guilt of feeling like I shouldn't be grieving this, because it wasn't even my husband yet. You know what I mean? So I think, I don't know if they call it like disenfranchised grief or something like that. I just felt like I wasn't allowed to grieve that. So not to like say you can't be devastated and heartbroken by this kind of heartbreak, but I definitely think, you know, with a partner at that level, there must be some kind of healthy boundary, if I can put it that way. You must completely love 100%, but still maintain that God is above them, if I can put it that way.
Mm. Also, when love hurts and it puts you through like the gutters, right? And it has put you through the gutters. How did you yourself, Gengoku, find it within yourself? And would say, okay, maybe I can love again, or maybe I can give this another try, having had the history of, you know, the pain, the turmoil, disappointment, you know.
So I love, first of all, but at the time I did say, look, I just need a break, I need some time off. But when I decided, like, okay, let me get back into things, I had met someone, you know, they're very nice, but how it ended was because I felt that they were putting pressure on me to be okay, and I thought I was okay, but I wasn't. But they were still kind of just like encouraging me, motivating me. But I was like, yeah, look, hey, this is not going to work. I feel too much pressure to be okay. And this is not going to work. So I stepped away, and I just felt like, no, man, I thought I was fine, but I'm not, you know. So me giving it a chance, I thought I was ready, but then I wasn't. So I genuinely just took a step back. And then I heard someone saying, you know what, why must we go to the grave with our hearts intact, like fully? Like, what are we preserving that for? And they were just like, you know, I'm going to love until my heart turns to dust. Like, I'm going to love. Like, what am I keeping it for, you know? So for me, I was just like, yeah, look, for what? Let me, I have love to give. So let me, you know, not to be an idiot completely and just get my heart broken over and over. No, now I have experience, knowledge, and wisdom. But because I have it in me, why am I holding that back? You know, so I was like, yeah, let me just give it all I've got.
Love until it turns to dust.
Until it turns to dust, until it's nothing, you know. And I really did. And that healed me. But when that situation didn't work, I prayed. I said, Lord, listen, I don't want to be stuck, heartbroken, devastated again for the next 5 years. Just snap me out of it. And he did that. I felt like I was literally like shook out of it. And that's when I had my dream about my husband, my now husband. And then we ended up reconnecting in the craziest way. So, yeah.
Do you want to tell us about that? Because we love a good love story here.
Yeah. So, in my mindset of trying to love until my heart turns to dust, you know, I was dealing with, you know, a little bit of heartbreak-ish again, because I had tried again. I had, I think, gotten myself together and felt that I was ready and genuinely put myself out there. And I guess it was great. It just didn't work out. But when I was really confused and stuck, because I was like, how, Lord, you know, I've tried this again, this love thing that I said I would keep, you know, I wouldn't give up on and all those things. But now I can't afford to waste the next few years of my life crying and grieving this again. Like, I really cannot, you know. I've been through a lot. And I said, Lord, just help me to snap out of it. Show me something, give me something. I don't know, whatever it is that will make me snap out of it. And I had a dream about that previous partner with somebody. And then I had a dream about my husband with like his family, I think it was. And so the first dream, like, it was in one night. The first dream, you know, it was this person, and I was like, okay, that's odd, that's interesting, these people don't even hang around each other, whatever. And then with my now husband's family, like, it didn't look good. Like, he looked like he was sick in the dream, and I think his father was as well. So I was like really worried, you know. And I hadn't spoken to this person in years. It was, yeah, it was maybe 6 years of no contact. And when I woke up, I spoke to this previous partner, and I was like, hey, funny story, had a dream about you and so and so. And they said, well, actually, it's true. They basically confirmed things for me. And I was like, that's crazy. So I was a little worried about, you know, my husband's family. And I basically just went to his Instagram, liked his picture, and he immediately called me. And I was like, is this a mistake? You know, and he's like, no, I really wanted to speak to you. And this is, you know, with the knowledge that he's still with somebody else. And I was just like, okay, well, it's just going to be a conversation. I've healed. I'm okay. I can take it. And he was like, hey. And I think when we both kind of smiled on the phone again, there was like a peace that, I don't know, I experienced. And I mean, just to give some background, maybe 7 months before that, he sent me an apology. This is years later. He sent me an apology just out of nowhere, saying that he had found my book online, or it came up as a recommendation rather. And then it just was left at that. And then having the stream and me going to his page and our first phone call, spoke for 2 days and were like, yeah, okay, it's been great. Let's just leave it at that. But I think probably on the fourth day, we were like, yeah, look, I don't think I can let you go. And I said, well, I don't think I want to stop talking to you, but there definitely had to be a couple of months of probation to be like, is this just nostalgia or what? And we haven't stopped speaking since we got married.
Wow. So what I'm getting from this is pray incessantly and the answers will come.
There you go.
And the partner will come.
The partner will come.
So tell us about Memoirs of His Bathroom Floor.
Oh, so it's actually Memories of His Bathroom Floor.
Sorry, Memories. And I'm so sorry. Memories of His Bathroom Floor.
Yeah, so Memories of His Bathroom Floor was a little bit of a different way that I was dealing with heartbreak. Before that, I never thought that I would experience heartbreak in that way. I was deeply, deeply traumatized and depressed, and I wrote it using an example of this incident where I was sexually assaulted. And without just sharing too much information,
please, at your comfort.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. After it had happened, I went into the bathroom and I genuinely was just sitting and crying on the floor. I was weeping, weeping, weeping. But, you know, it was like those silent tears that, like, I don't think anyone can hear, but, like, I can feel that my whole life, everything had kind of felt like it fell apart. So I used that as the title because I really felt like I couldn't get up from that bathroom floor for years. I was just constantly remembering. I was always triggered. I would have dreams of being raped. I would just sit, close my eyes, and, you know, just go back to the bathroom floor. Like, I just went back there. And so it was very traumatic for me. But unfortunately, it took that incident for me to accept and start to heal that it had happened the first time. The first time I kind of just kept it moving. I told one friend, unfortunately, she passed away. And I kind of like just was like, nah, that was my fault. I shouldn't have, you know, just blaming myself. And then when this one with the bathroom floor happened, I also kind of blamed myself for a long time as well. And it was in a very weird place. It was after this breakup that I was dealing with. And then I dealt with that and I was like, oh my gosh, what is life? And then, you know, much later, maybe like a year later, or rather in a period of like 3 years, I dealt with like a lot of sexual harassment and had to deal with like a lot of sexual trauma. So I remember, you know, because I lived in the UAE and I came back home. And it was one time I was on my way to work and, you know, I was in a taxi and this taxi driver would not let me off. I ended up being the last one and he just wouldn't let me go. I honestly felt like it would happen again. Unfortunately, like days later, it did happen again, but it's not something that I speak of often because the reaction you get is like, how surely you're doing something most like you must be, you know, not acting right or whatever. So
no, this is not that kind of a platform. Nor do we give space to the sharing of those kinds of opinions.
Thank you. I love that.
As a country, as a society, we have an issue with sexual violence. We cannot have so many people, and we cannot have scary statistics like 1 in 3 or 2 or 3 women have survived sexual assault, and we only focus on that. But what are you doing? Do you know what I mean? So we are not that platform on Coco. We are not those people who focus on you as the victim, it or rather as the survivor, because in the moment, you know, you were victimized, but you've survived, and you continuously, you know, share your story in drips and drapes. And, you know, sometimes it comes across when people do that on the internet, there is often a very bad backlash. You're just baiting us with story, or you're just sort of like giving us drips and drapes. But it is literally to do with how much your mind and your psyche can handle at the moment, right? And healing isn't just one thing that happens one time and then I've healed from this and this is done. Do you know what I'm saying? And I'm sure you can attest that there have been times where you've thought that, okay, I have completely come to terms with what has happened. I've learned to live with it. And then 2 days later, you are an emotional mess and you just can't gather yourself. So we are fully aware of the journey that it is, and the continuous journey that it is for survivors. It's a lifelong journey. Because as you said, you know, there are triggers. Something could have happened to you when you were 20 years old, and then you see something in your 60s that just sort of transfixes you right back into that moment, right?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Like, it definitely changes you. And, you know, I've heard that it alters your brain. And for me, I think I got to experience it physically. I don't think it was 100% that I became physically ill, but I think it was part of it. I think it contributed to it. So just the trauma of sexual assault and, you know, just the depression and suicidal thoughts and all of those things. I later was diagnosed with all these things with my womb and stuff. And I feel that it's because part of that was broken. You know, so in memories of his bathroom floor, I kind of just used the one incident to cover all of these different little incidents where at times I would even apologize to, say, this person who has hurt me. And I just write saying, I don't even know why I'm sorry, but I'm sorry, you know. And if I don't take all the measures to be okay, it seems like maybe I don't want to heal. I don't want to be okay. But that's not the case, you know. So it was just like me sharing almost like a raw version. And a part of me felt like, okay, where do I also take accountability? And I share that, like,
say that, right? I think this overemphasis of accountability is the reason why, as somebody who has had something done to you, where you have to sit there and think about what could I have done, right?
Right.
Where was my contribution? And I think, you know, in certain instances where one person completely violates the sort of the boundaries of the bounds of interactions from person to person, surely you cannot sit there as the person who has had this done to you and try and find ways of accounting for it. It's not for you to be accountable for. It is for you to be accountable for insofar as how do you deal with your life after this, right? But insofar as the occurrence and even you having to be sorry, do you know what I mean? This overemphasis on accountability. Whereas perpetrators are perpetrator apas lelele kona akekho sorry.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just this overemphasis on accountability, and it's one sided.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's definitely a situation where I think one can say like, how, but where was God in all of this and that kind of thing. But another thing for me that I felt I kind of already knew and didn't want to go straight to people in church, rather, because there's the thinking, or rather people would normally say, well, because your faith isn't like this, or you weren't praying enough. You know, people in church can be really hurtful, unfortunately. But for me, when I was in hospital, getting treated for endometriosis, I felt like I genuinely had like a supernatural experience, where something just also told me that, listen, nothing here is going to save you. Nothing here necessarily is going to heal you. There are things that you're going to do to pursue healing, and I'm still pursuing healing. Sometimes I'm like, but have I even moved? Well, the truth is I have, but there were those things where a voice just said, listen, there's something bigger than you that's going to help you get out of this and carry you. And so for me, I said that, you know what, no matter what happens, I'm going to move on this particular train. And I felt that, you know, healing and empowering other women about, you know, whether it's reproductive health, mental health, sexual trauma, I felt that this is what's going to push me into my purpose because of that particular experience of feeling like, yeah, look, something bigger than me is outside trying to help me get out of this, you know, as much as people will question, yeah, but where was it when it happened? I don't know those answers. I really don't. But I know that for me, my faith has carried me. And if one day someone tells me that all of this doesn't exist, it's fine. It's what's helped me, you know, get through and wake up every single day, because I'm like, there's something so much bigger than me carrying me, helping me get by. And so that's really all that's kept me, and just grace, you know.
I had a guest a few weeks ago on Gogor, and she spoke about she had been mourning her husband for a while, and you know, she says in those moments of vulnerability and in those really, really down and weak moments, you know, you ask yourself, or not even ask yourself, but your relationship with God, yeah, deka, just a little bit, right? Because you are angry at this person, but you also want this person to make you feel better, want this person to turn back the hands of time so that certain things can unhappen, you know, there's a lot. How has your relationship with God been affected? And I know this is a very big question because there's a lot of different things that happened, but in specific instances, right, how was it that you went from sort of maybe even blaming him and then turning back towards him into your journey of healing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a tough one.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. So I think what the relationship is now is that there is room to question, to be upset and angry. There is room to, yeah, just like wonder, like, why did this happen? But I think in that, I'm still just like learning that, like, without sounding like a you know, cheesy motivational quote or anything where it's like, yeah, everything for a purpose. I don't even know if it's for a purpose sometimes, but like it really shifted, and I think I strayed away for like a long time. But like I'm saying, that experience of feeling like, yeah, there's something outside of me that exists, that is bigger than me, that I honestly believe was God, is what brought me back. Because I had tried to take my life, but that particular day was the most like clarity I had ever experienced. Now, for me, I was upset. I was like, really? Like, why am I still here? You know? But I've never been so, I don't know what the word is, of sound mind in that moment. Whereas I think, you know, I should have been maybe a little bit drowsy or feeling sick or something, you know, with measures I had probably taken to do that, to attempt that. But something genuinely like opened up, like all my senses, my sight, my brain, everything. I was so aware of everything. And from that particular experience, I was like, okay, well, there must be a reason I'm here. I don't know if there was a reason for all those things happening. It was just, you know, painful, traumatic. I really don't see any good out of it. But I think out of saving me from taking my life, there must be then a reason. And so that's when I started to really pursue my healing and try to get back to him in terms of like the relationship. And it's still on and off. Like, I'm still working on it. Sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm nowhere near where I want to be. But like I've said, it's something that's like kept me going. And my faith almost has to be like so big because of all the different things that have like come to knock me. But something that I always remember is the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they're in the fire. And I think they say to the king, you know, if he saves us, you know, we'll bless his name or glorify. I'm paraphrasing, but basically they also say, even if he doesn't, you know, he is still God. And for me, it's kind of been that mentality. Even if he doesn't get me out of this fire, I'm still like at that point where I'm like, he's still that to me. So yeah, it just took that experience and all of those experiences. And even, you know, now I'm still healing, still growing, still getting to know him, still getting to know me. But there's a level of like peace that I have now, and I'm pursuing that peace that surpasses understanding. And I think I've had my experience with Elroy as well, the God who sees. I've just felt so seen by God when I haven't by anyone else. You know, there's many times I feel misunderstood and all those things, but I have experienced a God that is like chasing after me, almost as if like I'm his love, you know, and knocking on my door. So I was like, okay, let me give in, you know.
And I heard you speak a little bit earlier on about, you know, having been diagnosed with different ailments, right? Some of which, you know, psychological manifesting, right? Naturally, you would have had your faith, but on a medical perspective, right, or on a Western medical perspective, were you also actively, you know, seeing the psychotherapists, seeing counselors, seeing therapists? You know, what was your way to get around some of these things?
So I have to say this. I am team therapy. I generally am. I just had a bad experience with it, and so I never tried it again. I'm hoping to. I just had like this weird experience where I felt patronized at the time. I was just like, this is not working for me. And maybe it was just because it wasn't the right fit for me. But I really genuinely believe in like therapy. I was meant to go to a center, but I can't remember at the time also why I didn't end up going. So it's really been like a one man thing almost. And I don't want to say one man in terms of like I haven't had support. I think the people around me have really been supportive. So, you know, my mom counsels people and she's given me guidance as much as, you know, we may not necessarily be able to have that exact like therapy kind of relationship, but her guidance has really helped me. The support of family has been great. And that switch again in my mind telling me to like pursue things to help me heal, whether it's sometimes even just sleeping or reading books or getting up and pursuing my degree again, for me was part of my healing. Sharing online these things honestly was part of my healing. Writing my books, I say my dedication and memories of his bathroom floor is, it was for me. It really, I didn't want to make a million rand from it. It was for me. So I believe in these other methods. I didn't get to take them because of like some of the experiences I had. And so I never got to give them a chance at the time. So I was very, I think, scared. But I definitely do believe like people should 100% like seek professional help. Like, I believe in the power of God and getting your anointing and all of that. I really do. But I also really think that he put people on this earth to help us. If you need to be on medication, do that. You know, I've struggled with sleep. So sometimes I would take something for my sleep just because I really just can't deal with, say, nightmares. You know, I need something to sedate me. I don't want to deal with that, or else, you know, it's a cycle. I wake up tired, all of these things. So in terms of like myself, I didn't fully get into like those kinds of methods, but I encourage them.
Big part of therapy is journaling, right? And you seem to have done that quite seamlessly, if I can put it like that, right? I'm certain that writing neither of your books must have been an easy and sort of walk in the park, but I think you took that leap, which is probably something you would have been told in therapy, and you took that and you told your story and you let it out. And there is a power in that release. But also I think when you have a purpose of having to help people, right? You may not know this, but maybe your purpose is to help people get through certain situations and situations that you have been through. I think there's always power in knowing that you are not alone in a situation, right? I remember when I was a teenage girl and I used to think that things were happening to me for the first time to anyone ever, right? My father, who I used to think was incredibly like emotionally unintelligent at the time, used to say to me that, you know, used to say to me, yes, baby girl, you need to know, Uguti, some of these things are not exclusive to you, right? Some of these things, you are not being targeted by the universe or whatever. And I think in my maybe teenage brain or my adolescent brain at the time was, it took that as an interpretation of my issue is trivial because it has happened to someone before, right? And not the fact that it has happened to someone and they have survived.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if and when my dad listens to this, you were right. I don't say this often, so, you know.
Yeah.
I think, Wintle, just if you were to have any words of encouragement or utterances, or if you had a message for anyone dealing with something out there similar to what you have dealt with, you know, what would you say to them? Or rather, if I could say, what would you have said to yourself if you as Bundle today could go back to the Bundle who was hurting and going through turmoil? What would you have said to yourself then?
I think I would have said just to be kind to self, because it's about to be a long ride, but a ride and a journey where you will survive. You will survive, like you're saying. You will maybe not be 100%, but you know, you'll get to experience the God who can make dry bones live again, you know. And it's not a straight line, it's up and down, but in the midst of that, like, there will be pockets of joy, of peace, of experiencing healing for sure, and restoration. Yeah, there's so many things I would say, but just that, like, to hold on and not to give up, because, like, the journey is so, like, full of so many amazing things in the midst of these painful things. So just to hold on, really.
Thank you so much, B, for sharing your story with us today on Gogo. You know, sometimes you write a script and you invite guests and you think that a conversation will go a specific way. I'm not sure what I was expecting from this conversation, but I think that the messaging behind it will resonate with millions of women and millions of people who have been sort of victimized and found themselves helpless, hopeless, strengthless. And I thank you also for sharing your vulnerability with us. And I hope that this conversation doesn't leave you feeling heavy about anything that has happened in the past, but rather lighter in knowing that you are being impactful. I'm sorry that everything had to happen to you. However, right now, there's a person living through this situation, and because ubuntle uyikhulumile indaba yakhe, maybe there is hope for the future.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is definitely hope. Thank you for the space and just being safe enough to speak and share my story. I appreciate it.
Once again, thank you so much to Bundle for sharing her story. I think healing and trauma and journeying, again, are words that we use very haphazardly. But I think if you were tentative in listening to some of the lived experiences, that we use these words, yes, haphazardly, but people are genuinely going through these constructs, and we need to remember to treat people with kindness and fairness and non-judgment. We need to remember that there are different modalities of healing as well. Sometimes relying on God solely is not enough. Sometimes relying on idlozi solely is not enough. It is a marriage and a conjunction of things to try and get you better. I will always advocate for psychotherapy. As Bundle said, she does too as well. It's just that sometimes we don't meet therapists that we align with. We don't meet counselors that we align with. That doesn't mean that the whole practice of therapy and the whole practice of counseling is useless. As she had said, her mother is a counselor as well. So fortunately, she was able to rely on some of those tools to get her to where she is today. Thokozani ending yabonga for ukusimamela namhlanje, and we hope to give you more content. And that is it from this edition of Gogo Have I Been Scammed. To share your story, please email us on gogohaveibeenscammed@gmail.com. Alternatively, you can reach out to us on the socials on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok under the handle @GogoHaveIBeenScammed. Remember that you can find our latest podcast episode on the Sowetan Live website, under the podcast tab, or across digital streaming platforms being Ayono FM, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Please do also give our other podcasts a listen, such as Sunday Times Politics Weekly, Taking the Rams by the Horns, 30 Years of Democracy, and of course, Business Day Spotlight. Gogo Have I Been Scammed is a Times Live production, and our producer is Demi Luzo. I have been your host, Gogo Zipho Dolamo, and until next time, Tamagwini Thokozani, Emakhosini.